DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Father Peter Mitchell, who is a priest of the Diocese of Green Bay. He received his doctorate in church history from the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome, and he has served on the faculty of the St. Gregory the Great Seminary in Lincoln, Nebraska. With Father Peter Mitchell, we go inside the pages of The Coup at Catholic University, The 1968 Revolution in American Catholic Education, published by Ignatius Press. Father Mitchell, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning, Chris. Great to be with you.
It was a tremendous blessing to be able to read The Coup at Catholic University. I originally picked it up thinking, wow, this is going to be a heavy read, but I found myself turning the page. I couldn't keep up with how quickly I wanted to get through it because it was so compelling in how you presented this. Thank you so much.
Well, that's great. I tried to make it a story. It's a complicated story, but I kind of sat down and said, well, if I was going to make a movie out of this book, how would I make people drawn in? So I started with the morning Father Curran is dismissed by the bishops in 1967 and the controversy that immediately erupted. And then I try to kind of fill in some of the background from that. Well, why, who was this guy and why was he in trouble and what was going on in the church and all those things kind of little by little I fill in the background. So I'm good. I'm glad it kept you up with a page turner.
It answers so many questions, not only about what happened at Catholic University. This is about what has happened in the church in the United States.
Yes, because Catholic University affects the entire church in this country. This is about why, you know, parish catechetical programs are often lacking in content. This is about why, you know, your son or daughter who goes to some local Catholic university and takes a theology class will often get fed with all sorts of ideas that are not in accord with the Catholic Church and the Catholic teaching. So it's not just about a few academic people in a room poring over some old dusty books. It's about how the entire church in this country was dramatically affected by a very small group of intellectuals who took control of Catholic University in 1968. That's why I call it the coup at Catholic University.
Again, just to frame it for everyone, it's not just about students in particular, and though it did affect them greatly, what they would experience at a Catholic university, but it also affected those who were sent by dioceses throughout the country over the last couple decades to Catholic universities to receive the training to go into parishes and serve as lay ecclesial ministers, to serve as DREs, and those who would become the formators of future Catholics.
Right, and that was the purpose of Catholic University from its founding by Pope Leo XIII back in 1889, that it would be a school where teachers would be taught how to teach so that any bishop in America could send someone there, a priest, a sister, a layperson, to learn theology, to come back to their diocese and now be the expert in theology for their diocesan catechetical department or for their local Catholic school or seminary or university. So by intention, Catholic U was set up by the bishops to influence the entire country, and for a long time that, of course, was influence for the good in teaching Catholic faith. But by taking over the School of Theology at Catholic U, the theology of dissent very quickly became entrenched throughout really the entire American Catholic establishment.
And it would set the tone for theology departments through Catholic universities for the next several decades throughout the country.
Yes, and it remains normative. I mean, if somebody agrees with the theology of dissent and Father Curran's ideas, this book is a great read. It's the story of how they won, because mm-hmm. they were organized, they were very motivated, they knew what they wanted, and they got it. And by and large, what they did remains normative. In conjunction with the Land of the Lakes Statement, which also happened in the same summer of 1967, Catholic educators said en masse, as a body, to the American bishops, you have no role intervening in higher education. We are academic professionals. We need academic freedom to do what we are doing. Please don't intervene in any way. And the bishops, by and large, have accepted that statement as a normative way that the average bishop, the most bishops, are not involved directly in the theology teaching going on within Catholic universities in their diocese.
Well, in setting the table for this...
Right. And maybe we could just share, could I share a bit about the story of what happened in the spring of 1967 at Catholic U?
Please do.
So this is all a year before Humanae Vitae. Most people are familiar with 1968 as a very important moment in church history. Pope Paul VI issued his encyclical letter, Humanae Vitae, which reaffirmed the church's traditional teaching that artificial contraception is destructive of the good of human marriage. And at that moment in 1968, there was a widespread movement of dissent led by American Catholic theologians against the teaching of the Pope, telling Catholic people, well, the Pope has said this and we respect the Pope, but you don't have to obey his teaching. He's not infallible. You need to follow your conscience. You need to follow the Holy Spirit in your heart on this moral issue. That all happened in 1968. What many people are not aware of, and this is what my book is about, is that a year earlier, in 1967, the bishops who were the board of trustees of Catholic University tried to eliminate Father Curran from the School of Theology. They tried to dismiss him. They voted at their regular meeting because they were concerned that his teaching was undermining Catholic moral teaching, that they were going to let his contract expire at the end of the academic year, 1967. And they called in Father Curran in April 1967 and told him, as of the end of this semester, your teaching services are no longer required here. Thank you very much. You're dismissed. Well, Curran demanded to know why. He said, I have a right to a hearing. The bishop said, no, you don't. You're dismissed. We're the bishops. You do what we tell you. That was part of an unhealthy culture of authority in the church. I really talk about that, but there was a Curran played into a lot of frustration among intellectuals with the leadership of the bishops at the time. There was a lot of censorship. There was a lot of lack of respect for intellectuals by bishops. That's all true. And there's a legitimate, it's not as simple as saying, you know, who were the good guys and who were the bad guys in this. The bishops, in deciding to dismiss Curran without a hearing, made a big mistake. Because Curran went out to the media and said, hey, I'm just a priest teaching theology here. I've been fired without a hearing. What, said the media? Well, this is not American. We can't have this going on in America, and this is, we need to have academic freedom. The entire university community, all of the students, all of the faculty, walked out in protest, went on strike, refused to hold class, refused to function until the bishops reinstated Father Curran. And for a whole week, at the end of April 1967, the entire campus of Catholic U was in chaos. Nuns out protesting with signs saying, we demand Father Charlie to be given freedom and a hearing. Seminarians protesting the bishop's authority. Everyone went out. It was a beautiful spring week. You know, it was the 60s. It was the era of the Vietnam War protests, and it was kind of the tenor of the times. They were protesting for freedom. It's a great story. If you're a newspaper photographer taking pictures of all of this, you're eating it up. And the bishops refused to comment to the press. They refused to give any interviews. They simply said, he's been dismissed, and that's all you need to know. And they very much lost the PR spin of this whole story. These young priests, Father Curran and his peers, went out and gave interviews. They smiled. They high-fived people and told some jokes and really came across as very, very happy, kind, genuine people. The bishop stood and scowled and said, we have no comment. At the end of this disastrous week in the media, the bishops decided to reinstate Father Curran under enormous pressure from the media, from the American academic community. It made the Catholic academic community look ridiculous in the eyes of the national press. So they finally reinstated Curran a week later and gave him tenure. And at that point, Father Curran was untouchable, because once you have tenure, as you know, in academic life, there's really nothing that can get you out of your position. And this is all the pre-story to Humanae Vitae a year later, because when Curran dissented in 1968 against Humanae Vitae, there was no way the bishops were going to repeat the fiasco of the strike a year earlier. They'd given him tenure, and they really couldn't touch him, and he remained then teaching theology at the prominent flagship Catholic University of America for a whole generation following Humanae Vitae against the teaching of the Pope and bishops.
Now, Father Mitchell, it would be easy for those who don't know the man to characterize him as somebody who was the evil, diabolical theologian who undermined the church. Yet we can't do that, can we? I mean, you actually spent time with him in preparation for this book.
Yeah, I interviewed Charles Curran. He's still a Catholic priest. He teaches ethics now at Southern Methodist University. And it was very interesting, you know, very kind man, very, very willing to help me out with giving the interviews, very generous with his time and very hopeful, you know, that I would publish the book. He really believes, and this is, I think, a difference in generations in the church. His generation that lived through Vatican II really believed that the Catholic Church did not respect individuals and did not respect human rights. And they acted based on that conviction. And I, as an historian, I'm telling this story just really, I want to tell what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of things going into what the frustration with the bishops and the culture within the clerical structures of the church, where priests often felt unrespected and mistreated by bishops. That was all a very real human experience that was very negative. So this idea that in the 1950s everything was wonderful, and then all of a sudden in 1968 all hell broke loose. No, there were a lot of problems in the church of the 1950s, and that became very clear as I did a lot of my research, particularly within higher education. So all of that spilled out, and Curran was legitimately frustrated with those things, but he then used that institutional frustration to justify theological dissent and to say, therefore, this was the era when everything was changing after Vatican II, often very poorly explained, the liturgical changes that happened very quickly in those years, the change in church discipline on things like eating meat on Fridays, the change in religious garb for priests and sisters that had all these things happened. It was the era when it seemed everything was changing. The times they are a-changing, as the famous song went. And within the context of that, Curran said, well, let's change moral teaching. This is going to make the church more effectively able to love and minister to people and show the joy of Jesus. And I really think there was a euphoria after Vatican II that generation really believed this would all lead to a flourishing of the Catholic Church and the gospel. Now, unfortunately, that didn't happen. And I'm of the generation that's grown up after Roe versus Wade and has really seen the fallout. So many priests and religious left their vocations. Catholic moral teaching broke down to the point that, you know, many priests openly said, well, I don't believe in what the Pope teaches, and I tell all of you to think for yourself, decide for yourself. And it's led to really two successive generations that don't know their Catholic faith. And so from my perspective as a younger Catholic today, we really see the magisterium, the church's teaching office, the Pope and the bishops, as a gift guiding us to know the truth that sets us free. Curran's generation would be emphatically disagreeing, saying the magisterium is the biggest obstacle to the Holy Spirit. If we could just get rid of the oversight of the bishops, we could all be free. And it's that difference of understanding of the role of the magisterium that really forms the essence of the debate and the controversy that happened in these years at Catholic Youth.
There would be a sad statement of dissent that would be signed by, how many was it, 500?
About 500 theologians, right.
My goodness. Could you talk to us about that?
Sure. So when Pope Paul VI issued his encyclical Humanae Vitae at the end of July 1968, Charles Curran led 500 other theologians, mostly American, but some from other countries. The same day the encyclical came out, they issued a statement of dissent, saying that as Catholic theologians, they respected the Pope, but had to inform the entire Catholic populace that the Pope was not infallible in this teaching, and that they had the right to make their own decision about this moral issue of artificial contraception. And they said, we do this as a service to the church to prevent people from falsely believing that they have to obey the Pope. We are protesting in academic freedom as theology professors. So Cardinal O'Boyle, the Archbishop of Washington at the time and the Chancellor of Catholic University, called the School of Theology to a meeting 3 weeks later, the end of August 1968. And he asked them to simply state their position. He said, out of respect for you as my theology professors at the university that I'm in as head of, as bishop, I want you to just explain to me why you're dissenting. Could you please tell me what your position is so that I can understand where you are coming from? One of the most interesting documents I found in my research was a found 75-page transcript, word-by-word record of that seven-hour meeting that happened on August 20th, 1968. Every single professor of the School of Theology stonewalled Cardinal O'Boyle and said, we couldn't possibly give you an answer to our position. It's so nuanced. It's so subtle. It's so complex. it would take hours and hours of research to come up. We'd have to write a book, basically, in order to respond to your question, Your Eminence. They're very respectful to him externally. We can't tell you why you need to read all of our books. And Charles Curran brought in Latin textbooks, Latin manuals, and said, Your Eminence, I'd like to read from you some of these Latin teachings. And the cardinal had to say a little sheepishly, oh, I'm sorry, could you please read those in English, because my Latin isn't very good. And it was really a process of intimidation. The theologians were trained professionals. The bishops were not intellectual in many regards. And that caused this tension. And the theologians basically said to the bishops, you can't tell us what to say. O'Boyle emerged from that meeting without any condemnation of the theologians. He said, we're going to have a committee meeting about this in a few weeks. And basically, these theologians continued teaching and continued undermining the teaching of Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae at Catholic University, the flagship school of our nation's Catholic educational enterprise. So the bishops met, the Board of Trustees met in September 1968. What are we going to do? The front page of the paper is full of the fact that all of our theology professors at Catholic U are dissenting against the Pope's encyclical. They were told by their legal counsel at that time, you need to follow the principles of the American Association of University Professors, the AAUP as it's called, it's kind of the ACLU of higher education. That group maintained that academic freedom dictated that no outside authority could judge a professional competence of a professor. It had to be done by his peers among his faculty. So the bishops agreed to follow the guidelines of the AAUP, which was an anti-religious organization from its foundation. I go into all of that in the book. And the bishop said, we give judgment in this case about these theologians and what they've done to a faculty board. They're going to investigate these guys. So for 9 months, this board had meetings, and that was part of the tactic of stalling and delay. For 9 months, they had committees, and they had interviews, and they took in all sorts of evidence. And finally, in April of 1969, nearly a year after Humanae Vitae, this faculty board said, the School of Theology did nothing wrong. They were acting as competent professional educators. They've done nothing out of line. But in fact, the people who are out of line are the bishops, because they should not be trying to intervene in the life of a university. That's contrary to American principles of academic freedom. And they basically said the bishops are un-American if they try to intervene in the life of a university. And they rebuked the bishops for trying to investigate, not even for disciplining them, but just for investigating the teaching of their own theologians. That was the insanity of that moment culturally, in which the principles of freedom said there can be no oversight from any higher authority.
It sounds like the Reformation all over again, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels. Basically, what we believe as Catholics, the heart of our Catholic faith in terms of teaching, is that the Pope and bishops are guided by the Holy Spirit when they teach definitively on a matter of faith and morals. That's what makes us Catholic. And so, in defending the bishop, this is an interesting aspect of the story. So Monsignor Eugene Cavan was the dean of the School of Education at Catholic U in the late 60s. And he saw from the very beginning that this was really about the magisterium. This wasn't really about academic freedom in itself. It was about whether the magisterium has the right to guide and teach us. So he said, when Curran walked out and had his strike in 1967, well, you're all dissenting. That's great. I'd like to dissent from your dissent. I'd like to say that I believe that the bishops are the ones who guide us and teach us truth as successors of the apostles. Well, he was ridiculed within the academic community as being simplistic and as being opposed to freedom. He ended up being thrown out of his deanship, really through a very calculated vendetta against him because he had opposed Curran. And when he was dismissed, Cavan wrote the American bishops a very painful, poignant letter, January 1968. He said, I foresee that this group of theologians is going to take over Catholic U, and if they do that, they're going to take over Catholic education in this country because of the role of Catholic U in the American Catholic establishment. He said, I foresee that there will be successive generations of Catholics who will not learn their faith, who will be taught openly to dissent against church teaching, and it will lead to confusion and the breakdown of catechesis throughout this country. And he was right on the button. This is exactly what happened as a result of the coup at Catholic University in 1968.
What would happen to Monsignor Cavan?
Well, Monsignor Cavan was dismissed from the deanship of the School of Education. He ended up leaving Catholic U about a year later. He was really broken by the experience. He's really as the more I read about him, I'd never heard of him before I started doing all this research, and he's really one of the heroes, I think, of Catholic education in our time. He basically sacrificed his academic career to defend the American bishops and say, we should be obeying the bishops. And when he was thrown out by this school of theology who moved to get him thrown out of his deanship, the bishops didn't intervene. They basically said, we're sorry, there's nothing we can do. So the one person who defended the bishop's teaching was thrown out of his deanship, and he ended up founding the Notre Dame Catechetical Institute and wrote the Faith and Life series, which is a very, very beautiful series of catechetical books that are used in many places today. So Cavan really was a prophetic witness, and he is the one who documented all of this. This is the beginning of my doctoral dissertation, was looking through his archives. He really believed that this story one day would need to be told, and he kept all sorts of newspaper clippings and records of meetings, and so that this story was there in archival form, and that was the beginning of all of my research in this historical work.
Boy, what a landscape that you got to really observe from a very high pinnacle, quite frankly, Father Mitchell, because to see all the players, where they had been, where they what affected them in that particular moment in time, and the results years later.
Yes, the dissent that has become normative now at Catholic universities really was claimed as a victory. So in 1967, the Land O'Lakes Statement was signed by Catholic educators across the country, the presidents of Notre Dame, Boston College, Fordham, St. Louis U, Georgetown, all met in Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin, and formed what's been called the Declaration of Independence against the bishops of the church. Mm. And they said, no outside authority has the right to intervene in any way, juridically, in our Catholic educational enterprise. And so they basically told the bishops, you have no role whatsoever in the life of higher education. And I really see it as something that's disingenuous, because Catholic universities fundraise based on their Catholic name.
Mm-hmm.
Collections are taken up in parishes to support Catholic schools. People send their children there because they're Catholic and they want Johnny to go and learn the Catholic faith, among other things, in his university training. And in doing that, by rejecting the authority of the bishops, these Catholic schools kept taking in the fruits of fundraising and the name of Catholic without actually being so, because to be Catholic means to accept the moral authority of the bishops in teaching the faith, which they summarily rejected at the Land O'Lakes Statement. And that continues to be the case, where schools are Catholic without necessarily teaching the Catholic faith, but still enjoy the prestige and reputation of saying, well, this is what the Catholic Church teaches, because they're teaching it.
Well, it's essentially what they've exchanged was one magisterium for another. And
exactly. It's the magisterium of the theologians, and that was a very kind of a buzzword of these young professors after Vatican II. They said, well, there's a new church since Vatican II. There's a new magisterium. It's the magisterium of the people of God and the magisterium of theologians, so much so that Father Richard McCormick, who was a peer of Father Curran, blatantly, explicitly said that the magisterium of the Pope and the bishops is incompetent to teach theology. And he was one of the premier teachers of the Catholic faith in that era, the head of the Catholic Theological Society of America, saying that bishops are not competent to teach us theology. And I think that's a sign of the difference. In the ancient church, bishops were theologians. You can think of St. Augustine, St. Ambrose, St. Athanasius, St. John Chrysostom. These great teachers of the faith in the early centuries were not only theologians, but also pastors. There's one and the same vocation. In the modern church, for many reasons, bishops became really chief executives of institutional organizations, whereas theologians were more specialized in their theological research, so that there was this tension or this dichotomy between bishops and theologians, which is totally foreign to the ancient church, but had become a normal way of doing things by the late 20th century in America. And that dichotomy was what was invoked as theologians said, bishops, you really aren't competent theologians. We are. We'll take care of all the heavy thinking. You just run the institutional church, and we'll do the theological development. And that's what happened in this moment after Vatican II.
Well, again, it is an incredible story that we find in The Coup at Catholic University, the 1968 Revolution in American Catholic Education, by you, Father Peter Mitchell. And I wish we had more time, but before we go, I want to leave people with essentially, where are we at now? Where do you see us in this, the aftermath of this revolution?
Well, I think the hope is that Pope John Paul II gave a new vision and a new trajectory to the church and to higher education. He came to Catholic U in 1979, a year after he was elected pope. Of course, John Paul II was a university professor prior to becoming a bishop and pope. And he emphatically said, we need to affirm academic freedom, but always remember that freedom in the Catholic understanding means following the Holy Spirit who speaks to us through the magisterium. And so obedience to the magisterium is not opposed to freedom. It actually makes us free. And he was always saying that to us at the World Youth Days and at the different gatherings where he said, you know, freedom means following Christ, obeying his commandments, obeying the word of God. And that joyful witness, that love and mercy means believing the fullness of the Catholic Church's teaching, that mercy means following the Ten Commandments, that mercy means following the laws of the Church. That is all, I think, what the young generation and the youth revolution that John Paul II inspired is still very much with us and is still just very joyfully confident that the way forward is not to change church teaching, is not to water down church teaching, but is to proclaim it joyfully and lovingly. And that's the way the church will be truly renewed in our time.
Mm. And as a footnote to the conversation, what would happen to Father Curran?
Father Curran was dismissed from Catholic University. In 1986, Cardinal Ratzinger, at the direction of Pope John Paul II, had investigated him and removed the CDF, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith of the Vatican, removed Curran's license to teach theology. And at that point, Catholic University dismissed him. And Curran sued Catholic University in the civil court of the District of Columbia. It actually lost that case. The civil court found that because of religious freedom, great American principle of religious freedom, Catholic U did have the right to have a religious requirement for hiring, and they had dismissed Curran because he did not meet the religious requirement of being a Catholic. So the civil court found in Catholic U's favor, very interesting part of the story. Curran then was hired by Southern Methodist University to teach ethics, and he still is a professor of ethics at SMU in Dallas, and remains a Catholic priest in good standing, and I'm still able to celebrate Mass and the sacraments, and so that's the situation of Charles Curran to this day.
Father Peter Mitchell, thank you so much for this book, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great day.
With Father Peter Mitchell, we've gone inside the pages of The Coup at Catholic University, The 1968 Revolution in American Catholic Education. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.